Only a Game is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
If you can name the only woman in the Baseball Hall of Fame, perhaps you've already read The Most Famous Woman in Baseball, subtitled Effa Manley and the Negro Leagues. Now, I've given that one away, haven't I? The only woman in the Hall of Fame is, in fact, Effa Manley, who was married to the owner of the Newark Eagles, one of the teams in the Negro National League. Ms. Manley attended owners' meetings, scouted players, scolded players who jumped their contracts to play in Mexico, and otherwise occupied herself with the business of the team, sometimes to the dismay of the other owners. This week, when I had the opportunity to speak with the author of the book, Bob Luke, I began our conversation by asking him to describe how Effa Manley, quote, kept the Newark Eagles together between 1936 and 1948, because that's what Mr. Luke said Ms. Manley had done.
Okay, well, Abe Manley, who, as you mentioned, owned the team, did not like the administrative work that went with operating the team. He liked to hang out with the players, go to spring training, make decisions on trades, play poker, drink beer with the players at the Grand Hotel in Newark. So he turned the running of the team over to Effa. So here is Effa. She is about 38 years old. She has spent 15 years in the millinery business in New York City. She's a high school graduate. She is very attractive. She is very bright. And she steps into basically administering the ball club, which means she has to deal with the owners, who are rich, middle-aged men, most of whom do not cotton to a woman at the table. Effa was the only woman to ever sit at the table of a Negro League owners meeting. She gave them a piece of her mind on a regular basis, and she was quite forceful, quite insightful. And all the while she did this, her real primary focus was advancing the cause of African Americans, advancing the cause of what she called, in her terms, the race.
You describe Effa Manley as, quote, a light-skinned African-American woman, and yet Manley always told interviewers that she was white. Why?
I'm guessing here, but my guess is she preferred to be known as white. The United States Census in 1900 and 1910 lists her race as black. She was the product of a union between her mother, who was white, and a Philadelphia stockbroker. But there is pretty fair evidence that in her mother's background, there was some African-American ancestry, which would characterize her as black, at least in those days.
Manley had favorites among the Newark Eagles, and on some occasions, she directed the manager, George Giles, to play specific men whom she wanted her women friends to admire. How did manager Giles respond to that?
Not very well. He did not like being told who to start and when to start him. Willie Wells ran into the same situation where Abe Manley ordered Willie, when he was managing the club, to start pitcher Terrence McDuffie, with whom Effa had been having a relationship. Abe knew Terrence was not up to pitching that day but wanted to make him look bad, ordered Wells to start him. Wells did, but then he called a meeting after the game and resigned. Said he just didn't like being told what to do.
Throughout her career in baseball co-ownership and general management, Effa Manley had a running battle with Satchel Paige. Describe that relationship for us.
Well, Satchel Paige, of course, as you know, was one of the premier pitchers of the Negro Leagues and a premier pitcher of all time. Abe desperately wanted to sign Satchel Paige to play for the Newark Eagles, and at one point had an arrangement with the Pittsburgh Crawfords where he paid the owner $5,000 for Satchel's contract. Satchel, however, refused to show up in Newark, but he was very attracted to Effa. He wrote Effa a number of letters over the course of 4 or 5 years that in essence said, if we can get together, I'd be happy to come and play for the Newark Eagles. Of course, Effa never took him up on that.
But she did want him on the Eagles.
She did want him on the Eagles, yes. but not under his conditions. She didn't she didn't want him on the Eagles.
In what ways was Effa Manley active in promoting civil rights?
She joined forces with a number of people in Harlem to picket Bloomstein's department store on 125th Street. Big department store, but would only hire African-Americans as elevator operators, would not hire African-Americans in sales positions where they would have contact with the public. So Effa organized a group to boycott, had picket lines set up in the middle of the summer up and down in front of the store, and met with the owners twice, the first time to no avail. And the second time, she came armed with receipts demonstrating that African-Americans made up maybe 75% of the store's business. And according to Effa, she also said to the owner and the owner's wife, look, in the African-American community, our young women usually only have two choices for jobs. One is as some kind of a domestic. The other is as a prostitute. And according to Effa, I wasn't able to verify this, but according to Effa, that got the Bloomsteins' attention and resulted in their promising to hire, I think it was at that point, 30 African-Americans as sales clerks and more as business demanded it.
Once the major leagues were integrated, the appeal of Negro League baseball was considerably diminished since, obviously, many of the best black players joined major league teams. But Effa Manley fought to keep the Negro Leagues alive. What was her vision for Negro League baseball after 1947?
She still hoped that there would be a place for Negro League baseball, that it would again serve as an advancement vehicle for African Americans where they could hold good-paying jobs, provide for their families, and be a part of an effective organization. She became increasingly frustrated when she began to realize this was just not going to happen for the very reason that you mentioned, Bill, that the stars from the Negro Leagues were going to the majors. And so the fans of the Negro League teams left Rupert Stadium and the other Negro League stadiums to go to places like Yankee Stadium and the Polo Grounds to see Jackie Robinson and Monty Irvin and players of other African-American players play. But she just remained extremely angry and frustrated that that vision was not going to be.
How did Effa Manley come to be elected to the Baseball Hall of Fame?
Interesting question. There's a very long history of the Hall of Fame having difficulty inducting Negro League players, largely due to the lack of records. Good records were not kept during the Negro League day, so it was hard to argue for the inclusion of Negro Leaguers. But the Hall of Fame in 2000 recognized that they were excellent ball players and many deserved to be in the Hall of Fame. So they got a grant from Major League Baseball, $250,000, to do an extensive research project on the Negro Leagues, conducted by a variety of historians. That group came up with 39 people they thought deserving of induction into the Hall of Fame, players and executives, just as in the White Hall of Fame structure. And then a group of historians, Negro League historians, was convened by the Hall in Cooperstown to vote on this group of 39. Of the 39, 16 got the required three-quarter number of votes, including Effa. And I talked with one of the electors, a gentleman by the name of Jim Overmeyer, who has also written a book on Effa Manley, and he said he detected nothing in the conversation about Effa during the election that would indicate that her gender either added to her attraction as a member of the Hall of Fame or detracted from it, that he thought the group gave her a very fair shake based on what they saw to be her contributions to Negro League baseball.
Now, in the epilogue, you describe Effa Manley as, quote, the first, only, and likely the last woman to be enshrined in Cooperstown. Do you think she would have enjoyed that distinction?
You know, that's an interesting question. I think she would have been pleased. How could you not be pleased to be in the Hall of Fame? But at the same time, I think she might say the group inducted the wrong Manley, that it should really have been Abe Manley who was inducted into the Hall. She said throughout her whole career that she got way too much credit and publicity, and that Abe knew much more about baseball than she did, and that her role was basically supporting Abe, of course, though she did it with incredible flourish and verve. And so she, as a result, got all of the publicity and the fame. But she always presented herself publicly and privately as working in support of Abe and seeing him as the main driver.
Bob Luke is the author of The Most Famous Woman in Baseball, Effa Manley and the Negro Leagues. It's published by Potomac Books, and the author joined me from NPR in Washington. Bob, thank you very much for speaking with me.
You're quite welcome, Bill. My pleasure.
My conversation with Bob Luke about his new book, The Most Famous Woman in Baseball, will be featured in this week's program. I'll also be talking with Tim Kirkjian about the 2011 manifestation of Major League Baseball, because the regular season is now underway. We'll be trying to find our way through the shattered brackets of pretty much everybody with the assistance of a few alleged college basketball experts. I wonder if even one of them is unsurprised by the presence of Butler and Virginia Commonwealth in the men's Final Four, or by the absence of Tennessee and Baylor on the women's side. I'll also be speaking with a man who walked away from a chance to play college basketball at the highest level because he felt he had something more important to do. So join us, and remember, you can always hear the program at onlyagame.org.